Consumer Talk with Wendy Nola. You can join the conversation.
Welcome back to the show. Yes, it's that time again for our favorite midweek feature, and we're delighted to have consumer specialist Wendy Nola with us for the next hour, answering your consumer-related questions and sharing breaking consumer news. A quick reminder that the second half of the hour of the segment is an open line in which you are very welcome to call in on any consumer queries at all. The number to dial is 021-446-0567, or you can send an SMS to 31567 or leave a voice note on 072-567-1567 if you prefer. And it's now time to say hi, Wendy. Welcome to the show. And
hi, Bianca.
All the way from Durban. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to be on the show again.
Nice to hear your voice. Wendy, it's back to basics this week. What rights do we have to return products that we've bought? And we're doing this today because despite the Consumer Protection Act having been in force for more than 7 years, most of us are getting the basics totally wrong. Is that right?
I'm afraid so. It's consumers and companies to some extent. So earlier this week, I was presenting to a group of millennials up in Midrand, and I asked them, so if you bought a pair of jeans from a shop without trying them on, and when you got home, you decided that you didn't really like them after all, they didn't fit you all that well, can you take them back for a refund? And almost all of them in the room responded with a very emphatic yes.
But that's the wrong answer, isn't it?
It's the wrong answer, and it didn't surprise me because most people do get that wrong. So here's how it works. We do have a legal right to return something that we've bought for a refund if it develops a defect within 6 months of purchase. It's that golden CPA six-month warranty on everything we buy. And we get to choose the remedy. So in the past, before CPA, the companies would always, nearly always, choose a repair and would only offer something else if they couldn't repair it, because a repair is the cheapest and easiest option for them, right? So now the CPA, if something breaks or becomes defective within 6 months of purchase, we get to choose, we the consumer, between a refund, a replacement, or a repair. We don't have to accept a replacement or a repair. So that's a lot of rights, but we have absolutely zero legal right to return a product that is not defective, a so-called change of heart. So that in the case of you buy the jeans and you don't like them when you get home. So in other words, there's nothing wrong with the product. The store does not have to take it back at all. They can just say, keep it, go away, much less refund you. But because so many stores will take back these so-called change of heart purchases as a customer service, and in most cases, they offer a credit or an exchange rather than a refund. We've got the idea, many consumers, that this is now our legal right rather than a customer service. And it leads to, you know, all sorts of drama.
Okay, so that means that most consumers have got the idea that it's their legal right. And as a result, there must be some rather unpleasant, it's my right to be refunded type scenes, you know, played
and
out
at
counters all over the country.
I've witnessed them myself, and almost every day I will get an email from somebody who says, dear Wendy, please will you get involved? This company refuses to, you know, I bought a pair of tackies for my son. They don't fit and they don't have his size. And they're offering me an exchange, but they don't have his size and he doesn't like anything else. And they're not getting that it's, you know, this my CPA right to have a to get a refund. And I have to explain, no, sorry, it doesn't work like that. An exchange is actually doing you a favor. But on the flip side, many a retailer continues to deny their customers their CPA right to a refund when products are defective. So I have a case study. I'm not going to use names, but a pair of shoes which Mr. R bought in May this year have since torn on the side through no fault of his own. It was a weak spot. It's well within the six-month CPA warranty period, and the supplier has conceded that he didn't abuse the shoes. In other words, it was a defect. But he's offered, in his mind, magnanimously to exchange them or issue a credit voucher, but he's not willing to refund, and that's what Mr. R wants. And Mr. R is getting quite emphatic about it and now being accused of being abusive. I've taken up the case with the supplier just yesterday, and I haven't had a response yet. So that is a very typical scenario as well, unfortunately, with your sort of slightly smaller retailer.
So on that note, does it mean I have to keep the box, if you know, the packaging?
This is a really tricky question because within that golden, I call it golden because it is golden. It's the period that we consumers have the most rights, that 6 months period after purchase or after delivery if it's an online purchase. If the product becomes defective, the retailer can't deny you your right of return for a refund or whatever it is that you want if you don't have the packaging. They will try, but the Consumer Commission has been very emphatic in saying that they may not demand that you have the box or the original packaging before they will honour the warranty. However, I can't say don't keep the box because from month seven, the supplier, the manufacturer's warranty kicks in, and they will always say, we'll honour the warranty on condition of original packaging. And you can't argue with that because there's nothing legal that applies. They will, very unlikely for them to give refunds that they're talking about repairing or replacing in some cases. But so they can say, you know, no box, no warranty. And so unfortunately, I can't, you know, my advice is keep the darn box as big and cumbersome as it is.
Yeah, it's good advice.
Unfortunate.
I mean, now, do these rules change if I've bought the product, say, on sale?
Good question. The answer is no. Whether a goods are new or used or on a sale or not, that full CPA warranty applies. This doesn't stop quite a few companies from trying to deny people their right to return defective products on the grounds that they were sale or promotional items. And it's a particularly favorite ploy of direct marketing companies. Those are the companies which approach you in shopping malls to sell you cosmetics or hair irons and the like, health gizmos. In other words, what makes it direct marketing is that they initiate the sale through approaching you or sending you an SMS or calling you on your cell, that kind of thing, not you.
Mm.
And in those cases, because you didn't initiate it, the CPA gives you the right to return a product bought as a result of that approach for a refund, even if it's not defective. So that's the one exception. But many of those companies state on their receipts, I had a case just this week, that goods sold on promotion fall outside of the warranty. Well, they can say that, but it's absolutely nonsense. It's just their way of denying people their right of return because they so-called discount all their products. It's a very easy out. And they rely on consumers not knowing, you know, they fob them off and they rely on consumers not knowing the law. And it's really unfortunate and really annoys me, but there you are. It's going to continue.
And if the item was custom made, what are my rights then?
Okay, so if you order, let's say, a piece of furniture and you give them the specifications and they confirm with you and it's all in writing as it should be or via email, yes, that's what I want, and they go ahead and make it, and you then decide it's not what you, when you see it made up, even though it's to your specification, you don't like it, you don't have a right to say that's defective or not fit for purpose because that's what you ordered. But it has this custom-made thing. I've noticed it's become another fobble for some suppliers. So there was this case that we discussed some weeks ago with a hairdresser. A woman, she'd been going to this hairdresser for years, and she ordered hair extensions from the hairdresser at Christmas time, which R2,500 worth of them, which turned out to be too heavy and sort of thick for her very fine hair, and they were falling out and whatever. They just looked awful. And so she asked on those grounds for a refund. We got involved, and she finally did get her money back after this long struggle at the end of last month. But when I checked with the hairdresser, he said, yes, I did refund her, even though those extensions were customized for her.
Mm.
Well, yes, you customized them as a professional, but they were still not fit for purpose. She didn't say, give me big, clunky, thick-haired, heavy extensions that are going to fall out of my hair.
Yes.
So there was a classic misuse of the, well, they were custom-made, so I didn't have to refund her. So, yeah, it's, as I said, the returns issue can get very clouded and complicated, but so that's why we do these shows, to try and let consumers know what the actual rights are.
And what is what does fit for purpose mean?
Okay, I used it there. Fit for purpose. The Act says that goods must be fit for purpose and free of defects for at least 6 months, failing which you're entitled to one of those 3 R's we spoke about, repair, refund, or replacement. But that fit for purpose term does confuse some consumers. I once got an email from a chap in Cape Town who'd bought a pair of expensive designer jeans, and then when he got home, he decided that they didn't fit him properly the way he wanted them to, right?
Mm.
So he went back to the boutique with these perfectly fine genes, no defect. And he said they were not fit for purpose because they didn't fit him. Not quite what the legislators had in mind with their fit for purpose thing. But on the flip side of that, just this week I got an email from a man that read, I have purchased a mattress with a base. I've since discovered that the base of the bed cannot be moved. The legs are such poor quality plastic and break when you move the bed, which is a problem because I need to move the bed every day to make it. It is against a wall, and that is the reality for many people. Is it a reasonable thing, he said, to assume that a bed should be movable? The company now claims that there are no exchanges on the base, only on the mattress. This is fairly common. Do I have any recourse?
And he does, right?
Of course he does. I mean, it is ridiculous to say, you know, to produce a bed base that cannot be moved without breaking the base of the leg. So it's a reasonable expectation that a bed should be capable of being pulled out and then pushed back in. That's very normal, typical treatment of a bed. And so if a bed can't do that without becoming defective, then it's not fit for purpose. And as for no exchanges on the base, that's absolute nonsense. The 6-month CPA warranty applies to the whole component, including the poorly made base. Watch people often do this. They'll say there's no warranty on the face, so it'll get cloudy, or something will happen, or the little switch or something, the little things we twiddle on, they say, no, that's not covered. They can't pick and choose. The item needs to be non-defective for 6 months, failing which they need to fix it. So, yeah, unfortunately, I could go on for another 3 hours with cases where the CPA's returns and provisions aren't being honoured. But, we just need to handle them and confront the companies when it happens.
We're chatting to consumer expert Wendy Nola, who we are talking about rights of return. So we would like to hear from you and get your questions. Have you had experiences with returning things? We have a caller who's actually just done that. But for those of you who are wanting to call in, you can call us on 021-446-0567, SMSs to 31567, or WhatsApps to 072-567-1567. We have Dennis on the line from Noordhoek. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, good day to you. I'm having a problem with my cell phone contract with Vodacom. They're invoicing me stuff that I don't use, and they've just passed a credit for over 2,000 rand, and they're continuing to invoice me for the same thing, and I just want to know how one stops this. Because I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that don't realize they're being invoiced for stuff that they're not actually even using.
Yes.
Okay. Cut in there. Dennis, what stuff are you talking about? What services are they?
It's listed on my invoice as content services and entertainment services.
Okay, so these are what we call WASPs, the wireless application service providers, and it's a hugely contested issue. We've done a whole show based on them a while ago. So what you need to do is make sure that you cancel them, first of all, and Vodacom must help you, although there is a self-help. You can do it yourself. I haven't got the numbers offhand. I can quickly look them up when we break for news.
I phoned Vodacom last month, and they cancelled it, and they've credited me for 2 months, which are, in excess of 2,000 rand.
Wow.
And I've just received my invoice now, statement for the new month, and they're continuing with the same thing.
Okay, that is ridiculous. They need to be cancelled. If you listen just shortly after the news, I will give the code that you put into your phone. You can do it as often as you like to check what subscriptions you have, and you can get them off. You can cancel them yourself without having to phone the network. But if you'd like to send me an email as well, I'd like to know. That's 2,000 rand is excessive. Over what period of time was that?
6 months.
Sure. Okay, so I would like to know what companies those are, and I'm actually investigating a case involving two MTN clients for the same thing.
Yeah.
So I'd like to know who they are, but in the meantime, I'll just give you that code. I'll look it up during the news, and you can start getting into the habit of, you know, every day or two just going on there and making sure you don't have a new subscription on there. They're an absolute curse. I mean, they've services that people neither want nor need, and they are very expensive, as you've discovered.
Yeah.
That was tantamount to theft as far as I'm concerned, but anyway.
Well, I have to agree with you there. I'll do my best, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Yeah, I know those extra charges that suddenly pop up. I think a lot of our listeners will benefit from that number if you give it out after the news headlines. But just a quick call before we go to news headlines.
Sure.
It's Gloria in Durbanville. Hi, Gloria. Welcome to the show. What's your question?
Hi. I actually wanted to just speak about the bed story because we did get a bed about 3 years ago with these cups. It's like a cup that fits at the bottom of the base. And the cup is made out of like quite a soft plastic. Plus the prong that goes in is also plastic. So the minute you push the bed, this thing bends over and just totally crumples. And anyway, now 3 months ago, my husband went without me knowing to buy a three-quarter bed because we were getting people from Durban and we needed an extra bed. And this bed had exactly the same cups. So the other bed we've replaced with feet that we had to go and buy at Spiro's to put in there. And then this one's got the same cups now. And this is a three-quarter bed, same cups, same thing happening. And I can't understand. I'm sure that they've had so many complaints about these things. But to me, it just doesn't make sense. How do you get a bed with a soft plastic cup that's not going to hold probably not even my weight, never mind a heavier person, you know?
I couldn't agree with you more. I'm going to investigate this. My beds I'm guessing this is a new thing at and lower end beds. That is a cost saving measure, and yes. I mean, to my mind, that is not fit for purpose. You need it. As I said earlier, it's a very typical behaviour. You expect a bed to be able to pull out, to be able to be made, and you cannot then put feet on it that aren't going to be able to withstand that. So I'll definitely be looking into that.
It's ridiculous. I've never ever. I said to my husband, I wouldn't even. I'd rather put bricks under the bed.
Thank you.
At least they won't break.
Cape Talk. Consumer Talk. Call us now on 021-446-0567.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to consumer expert Wendy Nola. If you have any consumer-related questions, call us on 021-446-0567, texts to 318-567, WhatsApps to 072-567-1567. Wendy, are we going to the line now? It's Pam from Pinelands has a question for you. Hello, Pam. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rebecca and Wendy. Thank you for a wonderful show. Haven't done anything yet. I have bought spectacles 4 months ago. They are varifocal or multifocal, and I find that I knew it would take time for me to get used to them, but I still find I can't read with the lower end, you know, the lower part of the spectacles. Mm. Have I any recourse to take them back and ask them to redo or check them?
That's a very interesting scenario, Pam, and it becomes an issue of, are they defective, or is it a case of, are we multifocals, and I have for a few years now, so I have a very first-hand experience of how off-putting they can be at first. But what would need to be established here was, are you just battling to adjust in terms of angle of head and all that sort of thing, or did they get the reading focal range wrong? And that I can't say, obviously, nor can any other third party. So that would have to be established. I mean, you said you haven't approached them yet, so that would be my first thing, is to say, please could you retest the reading range, because you know, I've tried to adjust and I'm really holding my head still and holding the book in a reasonable angle. I just can't focus. So do you know what I'm saying? So I think it is possible that they might have just got that slightly off. I wouldn't leave it. I mean, how long have you been battling to use these specs?
Well, I got them 4 months ago. This is my second pair. I'm actually wearing my old pair now because
So you're not new to multifocals. I would say 4 months. Don't leave it any longer. You're within that golden CPA 6-month period. So
yes, I know.
I would go
I'm
straight
well
away.
Aware of that. Yes,
and I think I certainly I wrongly assumed it was your first experience of multifocal. So now that you've told me that it isn't, I would definitely go back and say, you really just need to check. I'm not focusing. So I think it sounds now that I know that it sounds more like a defect rather than you just...
The distance in the middle section is fine. It's just the reading. I just thought that there was something wrong. And I was not getting, I was taking longer to get used to it. But
no, it sounds like not fit for purpose and not a case of you just not using the product properly. So so go back, Pam, and if you've got the energy or inclination, let us know how you went.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, that would be great. And an expensive spend, too. Thank you, Pam.
Yes.
An expensive spend. Yeah, multifocals. Yes. So definitely worth following up on that. And also not good for you if it is the incorrect
setting. Headaches and all the rest.
Exactly. Yeah. Before we go to the next caller, we know you're waiting there, Tony. Just one SMS. Hi, ladies. Can you be charged a handling fee for returns that are open and used?
That's an interesting question as well. You can be charged a handling. It depends. You see, she's failing, making the mistake in that question that both companies and consumers make by not saying whether it's a defective return or a non-defective return.
Right.
So if it's open and used and in so doing she discovered that the product was defective, and often companies will say, the dodgy ones will say, you can't return it because you've used it. And say, well, how could I know it was defective unless I used it? How ridiculous. Anyway, if it's a defective item, it doesn't matter whether it's open or used. She has the full CPA right, so she can get to choose between a refund, repair, or a replacement. If, however, there's nothing wrong with the product, then they don't have to take it back at all, and they'd be mad to take it back if she's used it because they have a right to resell the product. But just a note on a handling fee.
Yes.
It is very common practice and quite justifiable, given that companies don't have to take back non-defective goods at all. So, for example, if people buy building supplies and they've overestimated how much they'll need, tiles or cement or whatever, it's common practice for those companies to take the unopened products back, but to charge a handling fee because they've, you know, they've got to carry it and it's, you know,
often collect it,
invoicing and yes. So that is take it or leave it. They don't have to take it back at all. If they do take it back, they have the right to impose whatever terms and conditions they like.
Okay.
But yeah, so I don't know if the person who left that can tell me whether it's defective or not. But if it is defective, they can't deny you the right of return for a remedy if you've used the product, which many do try.
Okay, let's go to the lines now. Tony in Seapoint, data question. Hi, welcome to the show, Tony.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's your question?
Early in June, before I went overseas, I bought a data package from a reputable cell phone company in Cape Town, one for my wife and one for myself, at 1,400 rand each. When I got to England, I put in the SIM cards that they supplied me with, and they didn't work. Both didn't work. I was forced to go and buy two new cards from England. And when I came back, I complained to the people, and they said they would take it up, and it's now nearly 2 to 3 months that they haven't come back to me. Am I in my rights to get the money back if the package didn't work there?
Okay, Tony, did they give some... I mean, in order for... When I travel, I just have SMS only because I'm terrified of data costs. So you obviously need to have roaming activated on your phones.
Yes, correct.
I'm just trying to establish whether it was a technical issue or what went wrong in that case.
When I go to London, I like to have data all the time,
yes,
for phone calls and for data and for SMSs and everything. And so what I did is I saw this advertised here in Cape Town, and I bought it, and it seemed quite a good deal.
When you bought it, this is important, did you tell the person you bought it from, the person that helped you, what you wanted the data for?
No. I just, they told me it was a data plus phone calls package that I could make all my phone calls and use all my data in Europe and in South Africa, in Europe and England.
So they, okay, so then that is pretty much stating that product would be usable overseas. So
correct.
I can't really fully answer. It could be just, you know, a problem with this, with the smartphone setting, as opposed to the data not being available. But you, now that you're back, were you able to use the data here? I suppose
it's expired. It's only for England. It's
specific. I didn't get that. Okay.
Specific package just for Europe.
I was going to say, why wouldn't you buy it there? It's so much cheaper. Okay.
It is much cheaper, but I just wanted to be assured that I would have data straight away.
As I get you, without
much
having
cheaper.
To. Yes.
In fact, it could have cost that same 1,400 rand package would have cost me £10 in London.
That's killing. Okay, Tony. As I say, I can't know whether it was just a problem with the smartphone setting or whether it was the offering was not what they claimed it would be. So I'm going to ask you if you have the inclination to send me an email, name the company you bought it from, and give me an email address if you can, and I will take it up with them.
Right.
Because if that offer is still ongoing, then you know it's important to know that consumers are going to be able to derive proper benefit from it and what they need to do in order to do that. So if you could do that, Tony, please, I'll get back to you.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you for your call, Tony. And we go straight to Mac in Noordhoek. You bought something online, Mac?
Yes, I bought something online. I bought power tools online. So what happened is it was a stupid thing for me to do because I bought stuff on online before, and it arrived at my address very, very nicely, and there was no problem. But for the second time, I bought, but it was a different online shop. So what happened is I bought stuff. They deducted money from my account, and I was waiting for it to come. So I was tracking all the way from the time it was from the time that I bought it and up to the time that it was here in South Africa. So when it arrived here in South Africa, it said delivered to the office. It is delivered to this delivery office. So from there, it was said to be misrouted. So when I checked what is misrouted, I found out that it would have been gone the wrong way. So after 2 days from that time, they said it was now in process again of being delivered to me. So after 2 days, it was said it was in process, then it was delivered back to the delivery office. So from the delivery office, it was then submitted for delivery. After, I think, 3 days from that time when it was misrouted, it was said to be delivered at my doorstep, but I didn't see anything. I didn't get anything. And now it's almost... it was said to have been delivered to my doorstep on the 1st of July. Now it's in August, and I've never seen anything.
Okay.
Okay. Mac, when did you make payment for those power tools?
On the 25th of May.
25th of May. With a credit card?
Yes.
Okay.
With a card. Not a credit card, a debit card.
Okay. With a credit card, you can go to your bank that's issued the credit card and apply for chargeback and get your money back that way. It's one of the best, it's certainly the best benefit of a credit card to my mind, because it gives you that protection of knowing that you're going to get your money back if you don't get what you paid for. You don't have that protection with a debit card, unfortunately. When was your last contact with the company, and what justification have they given you for not delivering what you've paid for?
The last time was, I think, the mid of July. Mid of July, and they said some other couriers that are here in Africa or in South Africa, I don't know, they are dodgy. They use some other ways to get my tracking number, then they change the whole information, then it is not in that way.
Okay, so that sounds quite dodgy to me. Yeah. And anyway, they're responsible if the courier that they have chosen to contract with has not delivered, then it's their responsibility. So I would suggest that you go straight into demanding a refund at this point. And if you don't get it... You're welcome to email me. I don't know that, if they are just inefficient or a complete scam, but I would urge consumers to be very, very wary of doing business with fairly obscure overseas online retailers. If you're going to go overseas, stick with your Amazons and, you know, the ones that have a very hard-won reputation for customer service, because as you've discovered, the risks are massive. And how do you now go about tracking that company? And I mean, they could just disengage from you and that's the end of that. So, and the other thing is, if you are going to use an unknown online retailer, one that you haven't used before and you're not sure of, please use a credit card, because then at least you can get your money back if you don't get what you paid for.
Went to my bank and then they told me that they will charge me, I think they said $450, irregardless I get the money back or I don't get the money back. So that's where I just said to myself, no, I've lost, I can't lose again, because I think even if I go back there to my bank to say they can go ahead with the process, if they don't get the money back, then it means I've lost another $400 again.
Exactly, yeah. No, if you're welcome to email me so that I like to know which sites are to be avoided.
Okay. We lost Mac there, but we're going to go straight to Jean in Greenpoint, who has a question about a clothing item.
Hello.
Hi, Jean. What is your question?
Hello. Thank you so much. It's I hope simpler than the previous one. regarding a clothing item, whether on a straight sale or on a sale or reduced item. And one does not try it on, goes home, a suspicion it is a second or imperfect item, and also noted one of those plastic gizmos that has a T-bone thing on each side. You have to cut it to get it out of the fabric. Returned it, having paid on a debit card, and the salesperson agreed that the cloth was inferior at that point. Of this little gizmo. So was it in fact an imperfect item? Should they not declare it somewhere on the item or on the ticket? I had no problem, as I had paid debit, they returned cash. Is this simply a courtesy to the customer, or what is the norm?
That's not quite as simple as you think, Sean. because there are two issues there, sale and defective. So it sounds to me like you're saying they made it look like an ordinary markdown sale, and with their many on the go at the moment, whereas in fact it was defective. But either way, so if it was a straight sale item and you had bought it and changed your mind, you wouldn't have the right of return, but they would normally have just credited you or let you exchange it. That's the normal response. But technically or legally, you would have had no right of return if that item was not defective. However, if the item is defective, and it sounds like if the little plastic tag thingy had damaged the cloth, that is a defective item. And regardless of whether you bought it on a sale or not, you're entitled to a full refund.
Okay.
So the fact that... Ideally, yes. If for example, Cape Town is full of factory shops, right? So to put a little indicator on every item would be a little bit onerous on the owners of those stores. So they may put up signs in the stores saying, please note, these are seconds or, you know, factory rejects or whatever. They don't normally use such raw language, but they can say defects may include snags, discoloration, stains, whatever. They don't have to personally, and then you know that what kind of shop you're in, and then it's up to you to look at the item, and you obviously couldn't take it back and say, oh, look, there's a little run here. Then you knowingly bought that item with some kind of defect.
So one really has to be quite discerning.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Thank you for your call. Jean. We go to Tracy now in Lakeside, who's got a debit order question. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Right. Mine's actually, it's been quite an issue that's happened for more than a year now. So every single month, I have a 59 Rand debit order that comes off my account religiously. And I have every single month contacted Nedbank. I don't know if I'm allowed to say the bank's name. I do apologize.
No, it's fine.
Every month, so basically in terms of the reference is identical every single month. I get told, no, it's a card. It's a debit order straight from the card. I then blocked the card over a year ago. I don't have the card in my possession. The card was lost, stolen, whatever. However, this continuously comes off my account. Then I tried to block and to stop the actual debit order. I was charged 50 Rand a transaction for it in order for that to happen. So then obviously after 3 months, that stops. I then forgot about it. I see then it still continuously comes off my account. I then call. They ask me to please lodge a complaint to forward a letter of dispute. I then complete the letter, send it through. I got an email yesterday, a letter from Nedbank stating, no, sorry, we cannot help you. We're therefore going to claim. We're going to close this claim. You need to take it up with a supplier. I get told I need to Google and find out who these people are. I Google anything that I can possibly find in terms of what that reference is. It is an insurance base. I then call these people, give them my ID number. They have no record of who I am. I don't know who these guys are. I then phone the bank again this morning. I say, okay, can somebody please help me identify where this debit order is going? Who is the supplier? Where is this money going to? I then get passed 5 times between card division, fraud division, to be told, no, I need to block my card. My card's been blocked. I then go back to card division, at least to fraud division. Fraud division can't help me. They can't trace the debit order. I then, after 27 minutes on the phone, get told, sorry, we can't help you. We can't stop your debit order. We don't know where your money is going. You need to take it to the ombudsman. And this is over a year later. And I realize it's only 59 Rand, but nobody can tell me where it's going, and I just feel it's sort of, you know, and I feel it's
onerous on you. Yes,
it's absolutely. Whereas, you know, I'm going to the bank, and the bank is the one, you know, they're
authorizing it.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Okay.
Thank you for the question.
Thanks, Tracy. That unauthorized debit orders are a major scourge. Although, in truth, 90% of the disputed debit orders going through various South African banks are actually consumers using that as a means to make it through the end of the month. So it's a legitimate debit order, and they're disputing it just to get some money back in their accounts. That is the reality. But even with the 10% of legitimate ones, you're talking millions because of the numbers going through. And there is a new system coming in called DebiCheck, which will put a stop to consumers abusing the system, the dispute system, in order to get through the month. But having said that, what I'm going to suggest, Tracy, is that you send an email to the Payments Association of South Africa, which regulates all payment systems in this country, including the debit order system. The email address is very simple. It's PASA PASA@PASA.org. I'll get back to you in a second. I don't want to give you the wrong. I'm not sure if it's at .org. Just 1 second. Yes, PASA, P-A-S-A, at PASA, another P-A-S-A, .org.za. And they actually have the ability, if they get enough complaints about one particular company, they have the ability to blacklist them and stop them putting debit orders through any third-party processing company in the country. So I would suggest anybody that's had a rogue debit order do that so that they can get sufficient complaints about the rogues. And they will also, to answer your main question of trying to find out who and where and what is doing this to you, they will also, if you give them the references and everything that is stated on your bank statement, they will be able to trace who's actually getting your money through the third-party payment person and get it stopped that way. So please do send that email, Tracy, and anyone else that's listening that ever gets a rogue debit order, as well as going to the bank. And sometimes, instead of going to the bank, if the bank is proved unhelpful, as it would appear in this case, PASA is the authority to go to actually get them
to get it stopped.
Yeah, very frustrating. Rogue debit orders. Just maybe at this point, before we go to our next caller, Wendy, the numbers that you can...
Yes.
Yeah, for MTN and Cell C and all those...
Yes, absolutely. I did get them during the break. So Vodacom, we'll start there because that was the caller's
query.
You send an SMS, stop all, the word stop all, two words, to 31050. And then... You will the if you have any WASPs draining money from your account or adding to your bill, you then have the ability to cancel them. With MTN, you dial *136*#.
Mm.
And with Cell C, you dial *133*1#.
And then what happens? Do they check?
Well, they'd be able to see if you do have any of these rogue, unauthorized WASPs on your LAN attached to your number, and then you have the ability to challenge them and
report
basically
it.
Basically, stop them. So I would suggest that everybody gets into the habit of at least once a week, just put a reminder on your cell phone to go in and check. It's a much deeper issue than that because you need, ideally you want to challenge your cell phone network and the WASP to say, where's the mandate? How did I agree to this? Because I didn't. But that is not for the faint heart, that process, because it's just that they fob off and fob off and fob off.
So if you didn't catch those numbers, we'll put them up on the website for later if you need to check them out. Later, stop all to stop all those rogue debits that you're finding at the end of your cell phone bill. We've got a question now that we want to go to. It's Kat in Cape Town. Oh, I think we lost Kat. Did we lose Kat, Obi? Yeah. Yeah, we lost Kat. It was a question referring to post offices not delivering parcels. What right do you have there?
Well, that's a bit of an open-ended question because if parcels are over a certain size, then you need to go in and collect them. And so that would apply to most parcels. When you said the word post offices, I thought you were going to refer to the question that I'm getting mostly about the post office, apart from parcels from overseas not coming in a timely fashion, and that is that in recent months, I think seeing the rise in online purchasing from overseas, they've imposed a clearance fee. So on every item you order, depending on the size, you're paying in the region of R25 or R50. And that's upsetting a lot of people because they're saying, well, the postage was paid by the sender. Why must I now pay to collect? But they say that they can, and they are. But as for not delivering, as I say, they don't deliver unless it's a really, really small little packet thing.
Okay. Here's a quick one before we have to wrap up. Please advise Wendy about a very expensive home security system, shutter doors, installed by a reputable company, which have been faulty since installation in December last year. They've tried to repair them and make them actually work properly twice already, but have failed, and I have been badgering them. What are my rights?
Well, Did they say when this installation happened?
End of December last year.
Okay, so that's out of CPA now. But I'd hazard a guess that they raised the issue well within that original 6-month CPA warranty period. The companies have one chance to repair, so they don't get to re-repair and re-repair. At this point, to cut a long story short, it sounds to me, if they've acknowledged that there's a problem, they're entitled to a refund, which they don't want to do because the company's going to have to come and uninstall. But legally, she's entitled to a refund.
Okay. All right, Wendy, we have to unfortunately say goodbye to you. Thanks once again. We've of course got lots of SMSs that we will save for next Wednesday. Thank you for your time, and we'll see you again next Wednesday.
Lovely. Thanks, Bianca. Bye-bye.